A lot of entrepreneurs have a tendency to keep trying to make money so that they can just have a lot of assets sitting around and they can quote unquote take care of the kids. But they're not really using the full utility of that money while they're alive, such as, you know, deciding to travel when you're 40 or 50, when your best years would be your 30s.
We are live. Welcome to The Road to Mindset. My name is Steve Didier. Tonight, today, wherever you're at, we've got a very special guest, Carla Singson, founder of Proximity Outsourcing, a social media marketing and revenue optimizing specialist. Welcome to the show, Carla. How are you doing?
Hey, Steve. I'm good. How are you? I'm so excited.
I was checking out your profile a little bit, doing a little research, you know, before we jumped on the podcast and everything. Are you currently in Playa del Carmen?
I am. Yes. I moved here over the pandemic. And made it my home base. I've been here for 2.5 years, actually met my husband here. So that's nice.
Playa del Carmen is one of my favorite spots. It's kind of like a second home to me. I think I spent about 6 out of the last 10 years there.
Wow. Yeah. Really? That's crazy.
I live there. Do you know where Na condos are on 15th Avenue and 14th Street near the Mega?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, I know. Yes. I have so many friends that stayed there.
Yeah. I just left there in March. And like we kind of talked about briefly before the podcast, I spent some time in the U.S. with family and stuff like that. But now I'm in Saigon and Vietnam. I spent some time in Thailand. I'm heading to Cambodia next. So, but yeah, I love Playa. Cool. I mean, I've got so many friends there. I am not going to be surprised if I end up back there.
Yes, exactly. It's just super perfect for me. You know, I used to live in Vegas. I moved to Vegas.
Really?
I know.
I lived in Vegas for about 18 years prior to Playa del Carmen.
What
the hell is going on here?
Maybe I am you in a different lifetime.
Yeah, I don't know. This is so, it's getting kind of weird. Yeah. I didn't know that about you. I knew the Playa. I was like, oh, cool Playa. But that is awesome.
Yeah. I lived in Vegas for a bit. I had an event planning company in the Philippines, pretty successful one for 10 years. And I got an investor to, he invested in my event planning company to expand to Las Vegas.
Very cool.
And so I moved there, and then it was nice. I think it was a great kind of first city in America for me, because there's a lot of Filipinos and a lot of Filipino food that's really important to me. And it was not as expensive as other big cities.
I mean, that's kind of changed
in the States.
But it's gotten us.
I know.
I love Vegas. After I got out of the military, I spent some time in Colorado, but then I moved to Vegas, and I was there for 16 years. Then I moved to Playa for 5 years, and I moved back to Vegas for a year, and then So it's very, very strange. But I love, when I was in Playa, that's the biggest thing I missed about Vegas was Chinatown, because I am a sucker for Vietnamese food, Thai food. Not so much Filipino food.
Yeah.
My friends are always trying to get me balut. I was like, no.
It's balut is a bad representation of Filipino food. But I learned how to cook really, I would say really well, like Filipino food. Also like making healthy versions of Filipino food, because I know the original recipes are not healthy. When I moved here to Playa, because there's like 10 Asian people here, and it's, to make one Asian dish, you have to go to 3 grocery stores.
I was so happy when I found sriracha in Playa at Dax.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Made my day. I was like, oh, my God, this is great. But, yeah, Playa's fun.
How did you feel about, this is what my friends always ask me, how did you feel about moving from one party town to another, Vegas to Playa?
I'm well past the party phase in my life, so I didn't really spend much time in, you know, partying in Playa. But yeah, it's such a tourist destination. But I was done with it. That's actually one thing I didn't like about it, because I was dealing with tourists and kind of drunk people and all that stuff. But
yeah,
other than that, I really, really love Playa. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm back there at some point.
Yeah, it is. It is that kind of place.
It is. And there's a lot of people from the U.S. moved down there, especially during the pandemic. And what I noticed is it's a, for me, it was a great spot because I moved down there in 2013 and I was able to do, I started working online and I was able to do business from down there. You know, the phones work down there. Internet works down there. It's super close to the US if you need something. And it was just very, very, very convenient place while still being, you know, outside of the US. It's kind of a Mexico light, but yeah, it was a really good, and I found a lot of other people down there that were the same thing, whether online poker players or business owners, anybody who could work remotely was there.
Yeah, that's another thing that I like is I play poker and there's a pretty good poker scene here. And, you know, if I want to just relax on a regular day, I just play a tournament. And
Well, that's very cool. So your proximity outsourcing business, did you have that before you went to Playa?
Yes. So I started my outsourcing company as a VA recruitment agency in 2017. And then we just kind of improved our solutions. Basically, our solutions evolved based on feedback and demand from our clients. I started a full like outsourcing company in 2020. I also got an investor to really, you know, make a full-on outsourcing company, take care of salaries of people, even if the people that we needed, even if we didn't have money yet or we didn't have income coming from that new business. So that was really great. And also it was perfect timing because the pandemic, even though there were a lot of labor adjustments over the pandemic, right? The people getting laid off, there were people getting moving to other cities and all that, people resigning from their jobs because they want to stay in office and then they want to do remote. So there was a lot of movement in the labor market and outsourcing really kind of blew up as an alternative. So it was a great time for the industry. Yeah.
Well, that's very fortunate in the timing because a lot of people in the virtual space blew up during the pandemic.
Exactly. Good and bad people. Unfortunately, there were some not very good people that also had a lot of good content. And, you know, people being at home, not being able to do a lot of due diligence. Unfortunately, I've known a lot of people that got scammed over the pandemic as well. So
yeah, there was a lot of that. I still had my credit repair business during the pandemic. And from 2019 to 2020, instances of identity theft and fraud went up 3 times. It was horrible. There were so many people getting scammed. There were so many people losing their, you know, sensitive information online and everything. It was really tough. And that trend has continued, not that same level, the jump it took between 2019 and 2020, but it's just gone up though. So yeah, a lot of scammers, but with the proximity outsourcing, and how does that tie into the marketing and revenue optimization part of what you do?
Yeah. So I don't really kind of try to mention the consulting part because my time is very limited for that and we're always full. But when I was doing my event planning business, which I've done for like 13 years, and it's still there in the Philippines, my traditional business. What I really did was I was like the lead strategist of a lot of launches. So my team did the event, like they would do, you know, the lights, the decor, the hiring the host, but the strategy for launching something or like a new product, a new flight. I had a lot of airline clients and every time they launch a new route, we would be the one to do the event for them. And then I would plan the strategy for the launch, the PR and the marketing strategy. So, yeah, that was my experience working with big companies, doing launches and campaigns. And because I had a marketing degree, I really love the marketing part of it. Like I really love it even till now. Like I love doing it, brainstorming marketing. And, so my outsourcing company, because of the demand of people literally just asking me if I could help them find a VA because I'm Filipino. So that was funny. I would go to a conference and they're like, oh, you're Filipino. Can you help me find a VA? I'm like, I don't really do that. And they're like, okay, are you a singer? I'm like, oh, these questions are weird. is like, you guys think of Filipinos in a very special way. We could be like VAs,
right,
or singers.
That's about it. Well, if I'm going to find a nail salon, I'm probably going to ask a Vietnamese girl. You know, that's just in Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. They're good at that. I heard Russians are also really good at like nail stuff. Like, that's what I hear in these like expat heavy towns. The girlfriends that I have are always, oh, you gotta see my nail lady, you know, she's Russian. And they always say it in a way that like, oh,
she's
special.
Russian.
Like,
she's, yeah, I don't Russian. Know. Never experience with that in the expat heavy towns, but I know in Vegas, if you're getting your nails done, it was probably Vietnamese.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then the spas that are really, have really good like deep tissue are like the Chinese spas. Did you remember that? Like,
yep.
Yeah. So, in my outsourcing company, really how it started was people asking me if I could help them find a VA. And then when I talked to them, like, what do you need a VA for? What do you really need? So I just kind of really get to know their needs. And then usually it is always related to growing their business, getting more time back and growing their business. A lot of founders want to be hands off as possible in the day-to-day operations of their business, because they want to grow, and either whether that means that it grows without them, or whether that means it grows because they have more time for themselves and then they can think of like innovative ideas. So just mixing that experience together, I just started kind of testing different solutions. Right. And now our best solution is just consulting with a client on the role that they need for their business, really getting to know what they need, giving them advice and giving them an action plan. And this is all, you know, just purely consultative. We're really just helping them out. And if they decide to work together, then we, you know, present what our outsourced solutions are. If we feel that it's best for them to hire a strategist first, we tell them that as well, because a lot of people treat outsourcing companies as a results-based company, which is, it's actually not. Outsourcing is very different from consulting in such a way that outsourcing is having the thing proven and tested and repeatable in your company, and you're passing it off to someone. However, founders want results. So a lot of them go to outsourcing companies and they demand, say, leads, you know, but they're not a lead generation company. Or they demand a certain number like of engagement for their social media manager, or a certain growth, or they would say stuff like, I want to go viral. And like, well, have you done it before? You know, like, then we'll just copy what you did. So I think that is also a very important nuance to know when you're hiring an outsourcing company.
I would agree with you. I've had, when I had the most, I think I had 5 VAs working for me at one time. But it was 100%. You had to have your systems work out and plug them into it, not have them create something.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's where the expectations really get muddled. You know, I was talking to someone this morning about hiring an appointment setter for our company, and so the first thing that I asked him was, "What are you doing right now? And what platforms are you using?" And he was like, "Oh, it's mostly word of mouth, and they just messaged me." And I'm like, so what the appointment setter will be doing is accepting all of these messages and booking them into your calendar. Do you have a secondary source? Like, to be honest, I don't think that's worth 20 hours a week unless you're getting hundreds of leads, you know? And then they were like, but I do want to trial and error some stuff, but I don't want to do it myself. So maybe the appointment setter can do it for me. I'm like, that's okay. And I love that he led with the fact that we're going to be trial and erroring some stuff, but he didn't have to do that himself. So that would be the ideal conversation to have with your outsourcing company. If you're talking to an outsourcing company and they promise a specific result instead of just outsourcing certain tasks, that would be a red flag.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think a lot of people have a, kind of a skewed perception of what they're getting when they hire a VA, when they outsource a lot of that stuff.
That's right. And also, a lot of people use VA as a blanket term for a remote professional.
Right.
You know, it's like a VA is a virtual assistant. It is still an assistant. Right. I've seen job descriptions for VA that are like, oh, you need an SEO person and a project manager, and like, you know, a credit collection
right.
person, but they expect it from one VA, an assistant. Yeah. And then sometimes they would also demand strategy, like no, hire strategists. Right. It's weird.
Yeah. I think, what would you recommend for somebody who has a business and they're considering hiring, outsourcing?
I would say really get clear on what are you doing right now in your business that is repeatable and proven. And so you list it, you know, you sit with yourself, you list this down. Oh, this is, I'm doing this, or my manager is doing this and she shouldn't be doing it. This should be a VA. And then try to figure out the complexity of it. So if it needs a very specialized knowledge, it's probably not an assistant. If it needs team management or leadership, it is not a virtual assistant. It is a project manager or an operations right. manager. And the good thing about our company is that I would say 1 out of 10 hires we have is a VA. 90% of the people we onboard are actually managers, project managers, operations managers. Client success managers are such a big hit right now because people are really, online businesses are now starting to understand the importance of retention right. and how predictable growth really comes with retention. So client success managers are a great addition to any business. I cannot imagine, I will say this, I cannot imagine any business not improving their bottom line and even getting the feedback from your customer, nurturing this relationship. I cannot imagine a CSM investment to be a bad investment in any business, especially B2B. Because CSMs have a lot of, they take care of retention, they take care of client experience, corporate gifting, they take care of affiliates, they can ask for testimonials, reviews, feedback, referrals. Those things are very valuable in a business. So that's another tip, you know. Yeah, like even if we don't end up working together, just try to hire a CSM. It will make a lot of difference in your business.
What qualities do you look for, like when you are looking, you know, to outsource CSM for your clients? You know what I mean? What are you looking for in that person, that client success manager? Yeah, in that role.
We usually require previous customer support and client success experience that is high touch. So in the Philippines, where most of my team is, we also now expand to Latin America. And for some of our clients who need closers, we usually hire them from US or Canada. But most of my team is in the Philippines, and client success managers in the Philippines, there's a lot of BPO companies that are US-based, but they outsource customer support and even upselling to the Philippines. So PayPal, Verizon, AT&T, Western Union, those companies, Chase even, yeah, I talked to a Filipina one time, those companies outsource customer support for the Philippines. But what we need to see is they don't just do customer support, like they're not just agents, but they've had like a team leadership experience, or they had an experience with upselling. So because it's more high touch, there's more conversations to get to know the client instead of just answering calls like for an e-com company, like, oh, where is my package? You know, I lost my package or something. Calling for a refund. Yeah.
It's a lot more specialized. Does your company provide any additional training, or are you looking for people who are strictly experienced in that role?
Yes to both. So our recruitment process is really robust. You know, we deploy custom tests, English proficiency testing, multiple rounds of interviews for skills, experience, and culture fit. And it's a mix of they definitely have to come to the table having the experience that the role needs. And we also provide ongoing coaching and training. So my team has access to a library resource, a resource library of courses, trainings, and then we do monthly personal development and skills trainings as well in our own company. In fact, we even invite our clients, other team members, to attend our workshops, even if they didn't hire the other people from us. Today, we have a workshop actually about conflict conflict resolution and employee engagement for remote teams. So we have like these kind of, you know, activities to make sure that our team is always upgrading. We also sponsor, for all our manager hires, we sponsor certifications within the first 6 months. An example for that is all of our project managers go through the Lean Six Sigma Green Belt right. certification to become really good managers on the first 6 months on the role. And then for people who are manning the phone, we do regular accent training.
Oh, okay. That sounds pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, we want to be like, we want to be white glove. We want to be, you know, like the Apple of outsourcing, I guess.
Well, I think that's important because the more of that kind of development and training that your employees have, then the happier the customer, the end customer is going to be with the workers that you provide.
Exactly. And I've talked to a lot of founders and business owners. In fact, I closed like, I don't know, probably 200 sales calls. I really want to talk to as many customers as possible when I was starting this business out. And a big thing for them, getting the tasks done is a big thing for them, obviously. But the other thing for them is they actually really care that their teammate is growing. They don't just outsource because it's cheaper. They are actually really invested in the growth of this person. That's what I discovered. And so hearing that we have private life insurance, health insurance, mental health counseling, financial planning benefits to our team actually really matters to them. And for us, it's also kind of a selection process. Like we only want to work with people that care about these right. things. So, you know, they self-select.
That makes sense. And when I'm looking at my own experience with outsourcing, you know, I'm still friends with my VAs, even though I don't have them or the my, you know, former employees. And I tried to provide, you know, whatever training I could and help their professional development as well.
Okay. So can I ask about your experience with outsourcing? I'm just curious, like, what were the kind of the best practices that you've seen companies do? And what are some of the things that you wish outsourcing companies did?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay. my experience with outsourcing has been enormously positive. I met and became friends with a gentleman who owns an outsourcing company. They focus primarily on VAs, and we, you know, he's a Marine, I was Army, you know, we got that military background, we smoke cigars, we like traveling, you know, the whole thing. So we hit it off, and then I wasn't hiring at that point, but we just, you know, kind of forged a friendship. And then when it was time to start hiring, you know, obviously I called him and, you know, I know what he does, you know, he provides a lot of that ongoing training you were talking about. And when he brings people on, he puts them through like a 1 month boot camp that, you know, is very specific training regimen, make sure they're proficient in like, Microsoft Office and, you know, all the basic stuff. And then the interview process I really like too, because, you know, they really get to know what my needs were and then tried to match them with a selection of potential candidates. And then I got to do, you know, take a look at all the resumes and all that, and then do video interviews and all that, kind of do the whole selection process. So it was, you know, I ended up with some really, really amazing people. And one thing that I noticed, very, very particularly was the attitudes of employees in the Philippines. There was never that, oh, well, I got to go earlier, like too much of this. I was like, oh, what can I do? Can I do after? Oh, you need extra stuff? I'll work over. I'm like, no, it's not that urgent. Well, I can't. You know, it was like they wanted to work. They felt bad asking for time off. Like, oh, you know, like my brother's getting married. Can I just take like a half a day? I'm like, take a week. Shit. You know, like, you know, it was so radically different than a lot of the attitude in employees in the US lately, which is gimme, 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 not what I can do for the company, but what are you going to do for me? I don't really want to work, but I want everything.
Wow.
So it was really, really refreshing for me as a business owner with the level of, you know, I'd like to think that I reciprocated, you know, because I would give little extra bonuses, you know, and try and take care of them as best I could. So, but it was just a really good, I didn't feel like it was a one-way relationship at all. They like the level of work ethic and commitment was just off the charts. I was like, that really took me by surprise.
I love that. I actually love that feedback because some people come to us kind of as a last resort because it has never worked with outsourcing or they were like doing it by themselves. But I think that's where really the culture fit matters and recruiting for kind of really the character of the person also. Because a lot of skills can be taught or can be learned. Like, for example, project manager. If you really think about what makes a good project manager, it's a person who gets things done, really, really. And someone who really cares about the project to get the best outcome, timeliness, and quality out of the project. That's it. A lot of people can do that if they want to. And so in the interview process, yes, you may have this leadership experience in your resume, but what we really look for is how willing are you, you know, like how willing are you to get things done, you know? And so we look for certain markers in their life, such as like, did they play sports in school? Are they an eldest child? You know, so there's these other characteristics and that really go into analyzing what the role needs. I think you also got lucky because, you know, it's also, for me, I also believe in, you know, it's probably an energy thing also. You were wanting to be a good boss and a good client. And your intention was like, I want to be a great boss. I want to give to my team. And the team, you know, can see that. And it costs them to also step up and want to give more. Filipinos are very giving people. That's why we make good nurses.
That's true.
And wives.
Yep. That's the truth. It's the truth. It's stereotypical, but it's the truth. So both of my sisters are nurses, and like pretty much all the traveling nurses that go through where they're at are Filipina.
Oh, that's so cool. So,
you know, so it's.
And we cook for everyone.
I miss that food. Man. So let's switch gears a little bit then. Obviously, we know that. But let's kind of back up a little bit. What's your background and what kind of, obviously you've got a strong entrepreneurial spirit. Was that with you when you were young? Is it something that came out of a necessity or kind of how'd you develop that and get into, you know, getting out of the 9-to-5 and the traditional way of going about things and start your own business? Because you started it while you were in the Philippines, you said.
I did, yes. And my first business was actually a flower shop. And the way I started that business is only because I was unemployable. It was hard for me to find jobs because I graduated early. I graduated at 19 and, people didn't want to hire a teenager. And I mean, I don't blame them. I was also like drunk every night and, you know, I was, being a kid basically. Yeah, I was 19, tried absinthe for the first time. I'm like, this is awesome. And so I started a business. I was unemployable. In fact, I had some regrets, you know, like one of my regrets was I actually had my dream job, when I was kind of, I think 20, I was an executive assistant to a high power, like founder. But I took that job for granted. And, now looking back, you know, as an entrepreneur, if I could start over, I would totally be an executive assistant or a chief of staff and just give my life to a superpower founder and then learn a lot through osmosis, you know, being around them. But yeah, so my first business was a flower shop and I didn't know anything about flowers. And I chose that business because I sat with myself and I thought, what is something that is ridiculously overpriced, but we have accepted that it's overpriced? And I thought flowers. Because you buy a bunch of roses at Walmart, it's $18 for a dozen roses. But if you want them delivered to your wife, it's $48. And men just accept this, like with no arguments. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's a lot of margin for. And so I just went on YouTube, like basic flower arrangements. And I taught myself how to do basic flower arrangements. And I started selling flowers on male-dominated forums. So I technically, I pretended to be a man in sports forums, car forums, and I sold the flowers there. I would DM people or I would post in the general chat. So I technically catfished my first few clients. So this is a podcast about things not to do when you're starting a business.
I love it.
And then I just grew that. That was my foray into event planning as well, because we started decorating events and then I did launches. But as for like my background, both of my parents were really skilled salespeople. My dad held a sales position. I think he was like VP of sales or regional VP of sales at a huge gas company. And my mom had always been in sales because my mom needed a more flexible schedule. She would do commission-only sales. So obviously, just like all the moms in commission-only sales, she started with Avon and then, Tupperware, Sara Lee, all that stuff. And then she moved to selling appliances, which is huge in the Philippines if you buy appliances on credit. And then she moved to real estate. So both of my parents were good salespeople and they've always talked about all their lives. They've always talked about starting a business, but they never did it. And so I had that, it just was etched in my head that I'm going to make it happen. I'm not going to just talk about it, all my life and never do it. And, my parents, they really tried. They started little businesses on the side, but it just wouldn't fly because my dad had a full-time job and my mom was busy with three kids and her real estate career, but being the eldest child, my parents have always, in families in developing countries, most families invest a lot of money in their eldest child. It's because they believe that that child will help the younger siblings, and then that child will also be the leader, and then that child will like literally take them out of poverty. So I was very lucky to just be viewed as like a golden child by my parents, because that helped a lot in dealing with the anxiety of starting something. I was a ready, fire, aim person, more than ruminating and trying to be perfect. I always just kind of did things and then went with it. So yeah, that was a great time of my life. My biggest privilege is my parents for sure. I sometimes get sad, literally sad and frustrated because I grew up in the Philippines. I grew up with a shitty passport. I had limited opportunities, blah, blah, blah. Right. But I had great parents who believed in me, very smart people. My dad had two engineering degrees. They asked me or they encouraged me to read, then watch TV, So having parents like that, I think, is the greatest privilege ever. And not even like, having white privilege or being born in another country can beat that privilege.
Well, a lot of people, I think, will blame their circumstances and without even trying to do anything. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't do it because I'm this, or I can't do it because I'm this. Well, I'm in a developing country, or I'm an immigrant, or I'm a woman, or whatever, whatever the case may be, that people can find an excuse not to actually try to go after their dreams.
It's like losing weight.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
like, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm big bone.
Yeah.
Genetic.
Obesity runs in my family. No, nobody runs in your family. That's a problem.
No.
That's the problem. And I don't know if a lot of people caught that, what you said, the ready, fire, aim mentality.
Yeah.
Because when I talk to people, whether it's on the podcast or, previous life, I tried to put myself around successful people, the people that I wanted to be like. Because I really, that goes back all the way back to what you're saying about, being an executive assistant or being around, people who are powerful and have done it or are successful, because you're going to see how they operate. You're going to see why they're successful and what they do on a day-to-day basis that makes them successful. And one common theme that I get from people is that ready, fire, aim. Take action. You're never going to be ready. But you learn by taking action. And you're going to fail. Failure is the price of admission if you want to be successful.
Yes. I read this meaningful poem that I always remind myself, you know what? I should actually, now I know what my next tattoo is. And you helped me, Steve. I've always been thinking of, I'm in the mood for a new tattoo, you know, and I know I was going to do it this year. And I read this poem a while ago, which was like, if there was anything that an overripe avocado have taught me, it's not worth it to wait until you're ready.
I love it.
And that was the poem. And I'm like, that has happened to me so many times. I would go to the store, buy an avocado. I would scam myself into thinking I'm going to make guacamole. And then the avocado is overripe. And then I miss the moment. Yep. And I think life is like that sometimes, you know, you wait until you're ready and then you lose the chance instead of just like doing it and then iterating for improvement. So I think an overripe avocado is my next tattoo.
Okay.
I'm 90% sure now.
Well, I just got a tattoo. What was it, about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, something like that. I got, this one.
Yeah.
It's a Sakyant tattoo. In Thailand, you can go to a temple, and basically the long and short of it is you have a conversation with a monk. They will determine what you're looking for, kind of, you know, read your aura, your energy, and, you know, have that conversation with you about maybe what problems you're facing or what you're looking to accomplish or whatever. So it's a sacred tattoo. It's considered magical. So they create the design based on what you're looking for to accomplish in life or want protection from. Like my background, I did Muay Thai for many, many years fighting. And a lot of Muay Thai fighters will get it to get, you know, protection when they're in the ring so they don't get hurt and things like that. Mm-hmm. Warriors used to get it before they go into battle and things like that. But so the monk will design the tattoo based on your conversation, what he feels is good. Then they have a mixture of their own ink. You know, they put their own ink together and then they use a bamboo to do the tattoo.
Yeah, there was a famous tattoo artist in the Philippines who does that. She's very old now. She's like in her 90s. But yeah, the people also kind of treat her like a shaman. And it's this process is more painful than a regular tattoo, right? That's what I heard.
I don't think so. I think it.
Or maybe it's you. You were just like, I was in the military.
Yeah, but also the placement. This is a very, very easy spot to get a tattoo in terms of pain. You know, it's not like on your sternum or on your spine or something like that, you know, where it's bone. So I didn't think it was that painful. But it's not an apples and apples comparison, if, you know, depending on where you're getting it. I think it's about the same. It's a different type of sensation, though, for sure.
Interesting.
But now I'm looking to get one here in Vietnam.
Yeah, I wanted to get those kinds of tattoo because that Filipina tattoo artist, you know, people like treat her like a shaman. And then the tattoos she makes are really iconic, you know. Everyone says like the pain is different. And so I'm like, and then it looks different, right? Like they like pound the thing. It looks like a nail.
Yeah, I've seen it done that way. You know, they'll have like a hammer and like tap it. Polynesian tattoos are that way a lot. This guy had like a metal tube and a bamboo rod, and he just jammed it. Kind of like it's more of a Japanese style of
doing right. That.
But
right.
It's you know, one poke at a time, not like the gun where it's like, you know, you're getting 1,000 pricks a second, you know. So it's different. It's definitely a different sensation. But yeah, this is I was super happy to be able to do that. But now,
that's iconic.
Now I want to go to the Philippines and get one from that woman.
Yeah, I'll send you, like, she was actually featured in Vogue. She's really iconic. And a lot of people line up to get tattoos from her because of, like, she might, you know, she's old, she's like in her 90s, and so and then sometimes, like, you have to hike to this mountain to see her, and like that experience also adds to it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, now I'm gonna stop in the Philippines for sure.
You definitely should. You definitely should. It's very underrated. I wish Philippines will do better tourism advertising, to be honest. And if anyone is listening, I'm happy to gift my marketing time, because it's still very underrated how beautiful Philippines is.
I haven't been. I've seen pictures. I have friends, and it's something I need to experience. But I've heard it's just absolutely stunning, stunning. How is just out of curiosity, how is the property ownership there? Can foreigners own property there?
Good question. No. Unless you marry a Filipina. That's the trap.
Hey, got to do what you got to do, right?
That's a trap, guys. No, they're pretty strict about that. Yeah, foreigners can't own property unless, you're married to a Filipina, or there might be a way to do it through like a trust or an investment thing. Obviously we have the big brands, like we have like a Hyatt, somewhere, and these big brands. I can't imagine some of them just leasing the land, I'm sure some of them have bought it, but Philippines is also really growing in terms of real estate value. My mom was a realtor, so I've had the absolute privilege and luck to get guidance on investment. I started investing in real estate when I was 22, and I now own properties in different cities in the Philippines, and I just seeing and comparing how they perform. And the performance has been really good, even in my least performing property. It's still the appreciation is good. It's steady. Some condos even double in value before they're built. Like I have two condos that I bought pre-selling, I think 4 years ago, and they've doubled in value, literally, and they're not even done yet. So they're still about to turn over. That's how good, right now, if you're listening to this, like right now in 2023, it's such a good time to invest in the Philippines.
Oh, see, I did not know that. That's very interesting. I'm going to have to check in to see if there's a workaround, because obviously in Mexico, you can own property as a foreigner. You just do it through a trust, a fideicomiso.
Yes.
I wonder if it's the same in the Philippines. I'm going to, one of the main reasons that I want to go to Cambodia, outside of the fact that it's beautiful, but it's very underdeveloped too, compared to say Thailand. And I really want to check out, I've been looking online, and one of the things I've noticed is you can get condos like beachside for under 100,000. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, either foreigners can own it directly, or there's a workaround, fairly easy workaround to ownership.
Yeah. I think like Colombia is the same thing. Foreigners can own easily. But definitely there's a workaround investing in, because Philippines is an archipelago, right? 7,000 islands. There's also a lot of opportunities to invest in like, beachfront properties or like vacation type property. Some people have bought like islands there, like a whole island.
Now you're giving me ideas.
Someone's going to cash out the 401k.
Now the wheels are turning.
I'm happy to talk to you and give you advice, because I have a couple of properties there, and I have I have some really strong recommendations for you as well. Like I have one property that we bought for like under 40K, and it's making $1,000 a month in Airbnb.
That's a good return.
Yeah. It's very good return.
That is a fantastic return. Not to mention the upside appreciation and everything else. Yeah. So yeah.
Everything.
Definitely. I'm glad we had this conversation, because that is something I'd be very interested in. Real estate in the U.S., my background prior to credit was real estate in Vegas. I did real estate there for a very long time.
Oh, that's cool.
So I understand the game, really? But real estate especially when you're looking at Las Vegas, Phoenix, California, is so radically overpriced. Well, maybe not overpriced, but it's expensive.
Oh, God.
Very expensive. I mean, it's out of reach for a lot of people. And, when you look at when you, because I still have a lot of friends in the real estate industry in Vegas, and when you look at properties there and you do a financial analysis on them, and it's not worth it. You can't rent it for anywhere near what would make it realistic for an investment purposes.
Exactly. Like, you would have to flip it after 3 years to really make the money, right? Because if you're just renting it out, it will take you 10 to 20 years to make up, you know, what you spent. And then I don't know if you've heard about this book, but I also recently finished reading Die with Zero. It's a really good book. And the principle is like how to invest and work and take care of your money in such a way that it maximizes your utility while you're alive. So, I think for us, you know, we love working and we have a lot of entrepreneurs have a tendency to keep trying to make money so that they can, I don't know, just have a lot of assets sitting around and they can quote unquote take care of the kids. But they're not really using the full utility of that money while they're alive, such as, you know, deciding to travel when you're 40 or 50, when your best years would be your 30s, like, you know, just things like that. So it was a really good book. And it changed. Die with Zero.
Okay, see, that's the kind of agenda I'm on. I don't have any kids. So
there you go. You need to die with Zero.
Book. That's my book. I like it. See, this has been a very, very productive conversation.
Yeah. I know. And I enjoyed hearing your story as well. It's very inspiring because you are doing the thing. You are traveling. You are investing. You are not burdening yourself with like material things that you don't need. Like some people are like, I want to buy a yacht. But like, really, is that really like a good investment? Like, I don't know.
Maybe it could be. But yeah, I don't. I've got one suitcase, a carry-on, and a backpack. I got some stuff in storage, but that is it. I've downsized my entire life.
Yeah.
And what I'm focused on is just acquiring assets and living free. And that's why, you know, I've been so fortunate to have conversations with people like you who have kind of had that mindset of, I love the people who do it in a different way. You know, the ones who do it while traveling and the ones who, you know, have this freedom mindset. That's just refreshing to me.
It is true wealth. I think freedom is true wealth, right?
Yeah, 100%. Because I was just looking at it today, I'm like, shoot, my last day in this Airbnb. I mean, I love this Airbnb. It's like a high rise, and I got all of the downtown Saigon in the background.
I know, it's beautiful.
The tallest building in Vietnam is right over. I don't think you can see it through the window, but it's like, I just had dinner there the other night. It's, you'll get a kick out of this. It's the Landmark 81. I don't know how tall it is, but one of the restaurants in there is on the 77th floor. Absolutely amazing.
Oh my God.
Like top, one of the best restaurants in town. Steak and everything else. And the way it's set up is they have, you know, all the tables around the outside of the restaurant in the corner. So you're sitting right by the glass and the views are just amazing.
Wow.
So it was me and a friend. It was drinks and appetizers and salad and entrees and dessert, all that with tip in one of the more expensive restaurants in town, came to, I believe it was $62.30.
What? That's
it
crazy.
Insane. I mean, if that had been in Vegas or New York or LA, that would have been
put a zero at the end.
Yeah, it would have been a $500-$600 dinner for sure. And I'm like, I really like this. And, you know, it's just so different. And like, I almost got hit. Scooters here are out of control. I don't know how the Philippines are, but like, I was almost hit by a scooter 3 times today. I was on the sidewalk.
Just minding your business.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if it's too crowded, they will just hit the sidewalk at full speed and go around a traffic jam. Like they don't care. So.
That's what I heard about Vietnam. The scooters are pretty tricky. In the Philippines, it's not much. We don't have that issue. There are scooters, but they're more careful. And we don't really have a lot of scooters. We have like those motorcycles, like like motorcycles. And they're used usually to actually transport stuff instead of, you know, like family or personal use. Yeah.
I mean, I think when I look out my window, there's the main road down there. And it is just, if it's rush hour, from my window, I can see 200 on the road.
That's crazy.
Insane. I've never seen anything like it. Bangkok was pretty crazy when I spent some time there. But this is next level. Like, I think every single person who rides a scooter in Saigon could be a Hollywood stunt double.
There you go. Yeah. I heard that they just come out of nowhere, and you just have to be extra, extra careful, whether you have a car or you're a pedestrian.
They just go. And when I was, you know, I'm American. Like, I'm waiting to try and walk across the street. And my friend here, she was like, no, you just got to walk. I'm like, we'll get hit. Now she just walked out to the scooters and they're just like zooming around her. I was like, you're giving me anxiety. And I don't get stressed out about stuff like that. But
it's like driving in Mexico. The Mexican drivers would joke about pedestrians having mm-hmm. no rights in Mexico. And the drivers are just crazy. And they'll drive super close to you because they want to overtake you, even if it doesn't make sense. Like, those are, I mean, that, I think the order is what I miss most about being in the States or in Canada. Yeah. The predictability and the order. Sometimes I miss it. But I would not trade it for, you know, the freedom, the variety of food, and the better, basically, standard of living. If you're outside of you know, America or Canada.
No, I agree 100%. I don't, people are like, hey, when are you coming back? I'm like,
I'm home.
Yeah. I haven't found a home yet. I mean, the closest thing I've had to a home is Playa, but, right. And I honestly, I really do like the convenience there because it is almost 11 o'clock at night here. And
you're exactly 12 hours ahead of me.
And, you know, I've done podcasts at 3 o'clock in the morning, accommodating people's schedule in the States. So although I do absolutely adore Southeast Asia, Mexico is easier.
Yes, absolutely. That's actually the main reason I chose Mexico, when I was choosing to, you know, a country outside of the States, but in the same time zone, it was like Medellin, right? Costa Rica, Mexico. Mexico was easy, especially Playa, of course, because of what you said. It's a very Americanized Mexican mm-hmm. city. That's why my Spanish is shit, because everyone I hang out with speaks mm-hmm. English, you know, and Americans mostly. So it was a great, like, kind of a soft landing for me. What I think about the jokes about, like, you know, do the toilets work, like clean water, like, it's nothing compared to all the perks, right? And then the time zone thing, I was in the Philippines for, I think, 6 months during the whole pandemic thing. Funny story, I actually got stranded in Phuket when the pandemic happened. I don't know if you remember, but Thailand closed their airports. They didn't give an F whatever your citizenship is. You're not getting out. They closed the airports. So I was stuck in Phuket for 5 months.
There's worse places to be stuck.
I didn't speak the language. I know. Yeah, I guess. But I didn't speak the language. It was very depressing. I didn't have friends. And my partner at that time, we were like breaking up, you know. It was such a bad time. So after that, I went to Bangkok. I begged the Philippine embassy to get me on a flight. They said they couldn't do anything. Only charter flights can get out of Thailand. And so I found a Facebook group of other Filipinos and we chartered an AirAsia flight.
Oh, wow.
We paid for the whole plane to fly a commercial airplane. There were a lot of us. I think I ultimately ended up paying $900 to make that flight, which is a lot of money for a 3-hour flight, but I needed to get out.
Oh, for sure. Especially in the situation you were in. I can't imagine being quarantined with somebody I'm kind of breaking up with. Oh,
I know. It was so sad. And then you, I don't know. And what you're going to do, you're just sad. You're depressed. Like, you know, everyone's telling you you're a murderer if you don't wear a mask and, like, you know, if you don't get the vaccine or whatever. So anyway, after that, I went back to the Philippines for a bit. And I actually did that to check out real estate investments because I knew I had an opportunity because people were selling because they're scared, right? And so I was able to score some really good deals. And then I worked for my outsourcing company in the Philippine time zone, and my calendar was between 8 to 3 a.m. I wouldn't have calls every day, but I totally empathize with you on how hard it is on your body if you're doing it so much. And so that's when I was like, if I want to grow my business, I need to be in that time zone, because I wouldn't care working 12 hours a day as long as my body, I'm sleeping right and I'm eating right. So, yeah.
That's exactly, you know, because I'm typically a discipline creates freedom sort of guy. I'm very regimented in my routine. And, you know, I get up early, I get my workout in, and I, you know, structure my day. But here it's been so all over the board. I haven't got that sense of structure at all. Because I think, you know, like Thursday, I've got a podcast at 9 a.m. here, but then I've got another one at midnight. And so because I'm batching everything. Like right now, my internet is fantastic. It's like 300 megs up and down. So, and I love the background and I love the place. And I don't know, when I go to Cambodia, I doubt if I'm going to have internet enough to do streaming. I'm going to be there for a couple weeks and then go to, I think Koh Samui in Thailand. The bottom line is I haven't even booked flights or Airbnbs or anything yet, because I'll just, whenever inspiration strikes me, I'll book a flight and that'll be about it. But so I know is my last day here is the 8th. So I probably ought to check into stuff tomorrow, but whatever. It's all good. I'll get that, but it depends on where I end up in Thailand. You know, if I have really good internet, you know, I've been really lucky with Airbnbs so far. You know, I contact them, they'll measure the internet for me and send me a screenshot, and then I can kind of get an idea where it's going at, but it's no guarantee. So I'm like, this week I've got, I think, 7 podcasts I'm doing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's crazy. Well, I'm on a roll too. I get that.
It'll batch it, and then I can spend time editing and release as they go. So, you know, it's all good. Well, yeah. Hey, I really appreciate your time. It was fantastic meeting you, because we have a lot of little parallels with Vegas and Playa and all that's kind of weird.
I know. These are the people that people think we're on a midlife crisis because of our choices in homes. Vegas and Playa, people are like, are you okay? I'm like, I've never done cocaine in my life. So how dare you judge me?
Don't judge me.
No matter the abundance, living in Vegas and living in Mexico, no matter the abundance, I've never done.
Thing. But it's funny that you mentioned that with Mexico, because I remember like it was my second or third day in Playa, and I was just out and I stopped by this bar and I had a beer, and the dude sitting next to me is like, so are you searching for something or running from something? I was like,
ooh, very philosophical.
Like, what do you mean? He's like, nah, every American who ends up living in Mexico, they're either searching for something or they're running from something. I was like, ooh, that makes sense. I guess I'm in the searching category, but it's true.
I'm running from the IRS. Actually, no. I'm just kidding.
No, of course not. I wouldn't do that. No.
No, you can't do that. They'll find out.
The IRS will find out. They're the one people I just don't mess with. Yeah, like everything else.
Right. Exactly.
They'll find you wherever you are at. Doesn't matter, Vietnam, Mexico.
They'll find you. I know.
So I don't know. Yeah. That was very cool meeting you. So I'll be in touch about the real estate in the Philippines. That is something I would like to kind of dig into a little bit more, especially if there's a workaround for foreign ownership. I mean, that would be mandatory. I don't see myself dropping in there and getting married that quick. So
that quick, that's the asterisk. Like it might still happen.
You never know. So the whole passport bros movement is a real thing.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, I jokingly tell my husband that. I'm like, babe, you're a passport bro. You're like, for real, a passport bro now.
Is he American or Canadian?
He's American. Yeah, he's from Idaho. Passport bro. So, for sure. Passport bro. Yeah.
It's true, though. I mean, we could go into a whole other conversation about like women in the States.
Oh my God. Like, yes. Oh. Can I have you on my podcast to discuss that?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
I could talk about
I'll email you. I'd love that discussion.
I could talk about that all day long.
I love that. Okay, let's do it.